Okay. I have to tell you that the more I'm getting into these Zmirot and Piyutim, the more amazed I am by the amount of kind of like overlap that I'm finding between different Zmirot. I'm finding as we go through themes and ideas and connections between one Zemer that we learned here and the next. And I only have to assume that if I've been through four or five and I'm finding connections, that they must be there in the other ones also. Even when I wouldn't necessarily expect to find them. For example, in the Zemer, or the piyut that we're going to study today, V'chadlati, I see a number of striking parallels to Dvorei Korah. Not, I don't mean necessarily in the style of the poetry. I don't know enough about it to be able to judge that. But in terms of some of the sources that are being drawn upon, and the particular ideas, and even the structure of the Zemer, not in terms of the poetic structure, but the, I guess what you could call the ideational structure, the ideas and the flow of ideas, I find very, very similar to Dvorei Korah. Even though, as we're going to see, this Zemer is completely and totally rooted in Kabbalah, whereas, as far as I know, Dunash ibn Labrat was no Kabbalist, as far as I know. But then again, we saw with Samanafshi also that the Chatam Sofer said that it was filled with ideas of Kabbalah, even though I didn't realize that the Ibn Ezra is a Kabbalist. Ibn Ezra and Dunash are roughly from the same time period. So as I said then, either Kabbalah had a much further reach than historians realize, or perhaps very similar ideas can be arrived at from very different vantage points. Yesh laniach that the Zemer of Dunash ibn Labrat was available to the author of L'chadlati hundreds of years later, but still. And I found some parallels also to some of the other Zmirot that we learned. So I just find it fascinating that there's so many connections. I was aided in this year, first of all, kind of a response or as a result of Reb Berzon's inspiration, I started using that sefer. What's it, Otsar Tfilot? Is that what it was? That he photocopied last time, so I found some nice stuff in here. Again, the Piyut website is coming through for us. It seems to be all women writing on there. This one is a lengthy article by somebody named Chaviva Padia. Also fascinating. And, in addition to a couple of books, believe it or not, this is the kind of thing that I would have thought was sketchy, but I actually found a website called KabbalahOnline.org or something, which, believe it or not, has some very, very useful things. You know how I found it? It's an interesting story. Danny, you remember last summer we went to Tzfat for Lom Lav Malka? This interesting fellow, we went to visit him in his house and he like played guitar and bongo drums and told us stories. So it was an interesting experience. So the fellow, I asked him like what he does with his time, and he told me that he like works on this website, KabbalahOnline.org. So I, in my cynical way, I naturally assumed it was one of these you know, crazy things. But so when I went home the next day or two, I actually looked at the website and saw that it has like content, like significant content that I found useful. So anyway, Harav Shlomo Halevi Alkabetz, who also has a street name for him in our neighborhood, by the way, is also from the circle of the Mekubalim of Tzfat in the 16th century. He was born actually in Greece, in Salonika, and then he came to Tzfat, where he was there at the same time as the Arizal. Passed away a few years after the Arizal, which makes him also a contemporary of Rav Najara, who we spoke about. He was older than Rav Najara, but also a contemporary. He was there with all of them. I believe he's buried in the cemetery of Tzfat. I believe his kever is known. And he was also a student of Rav Yosef Karo, who was in Tzfat at the time. And he was actually the Rebbe of Rav Moshe Cordovero, the Ramak, who also has a street in our neighborhood, and also one of the great Kabbalists of the time. This particular Zemer, L'chadlati, apparently, you know, first of all, is, as we'll see, very intimately associated with the minhag of Kabbalat Shabbat, which was instituted at the time. The Arizal himself spoke very, very highly of this particular Zemer, And it, in a very short period of time, became virtually universally accepted in the Siddur Tefillah. It's one thing to have a zemer that's sung around the Shabbos table. It's quite another to have a zemer, or a piyut rather, that becomes part of the order of tefillot, particularly at such a late date. By the 16th century, the Siddur, which at an earlier point in history perhaps didn't really exist as a text, right? If you know anything about the evolution of tefillah, it's clear from the Gemara that even in Shmona Esrei, there's no exact text that had to be said. There were certain brachot that have to be, certain themes have to be addressed in a certain format, but the exact text was not set until later on. And certainly the other things that we say that aren't part of the main framework of Pesukei Dezim, Kriyat Shema, Ubirchoteha, and Shmona Esrei, certainly were admitted. But by the 16th century, it was somewhat rare for something to achieve such acceptance. And across the board, Ashkenazim, Sfaradim, Elisha, they say, Sfaradim say Lechadodi, right? I'm trying to write? See? I mean, the authors of Sfaradim. But it became accepted, pretty much universally, and in a pretty short period of time. It was already in printed editions of the Siddur, not long after the author passed away. The Piyut is written on two levels. There's a level of pshat, if you want to call it that, in which it's simply stirringly beautiful poetry, heavily, heavily laced with biblical allusions, similar to what we saw in some of the other piyutim. But there's a whole different plane to it also, what you might call sod, in which the whole thing is based on concepts of Kabbalah. Now, of course, that puts all of us, including me, at a distinct disadvantage, because I don't know the first thing about Kabbalah. Well, now that I read the website, of course. But I don't know anything about Kabbalah. Whenever I do discuss Kabbalah, I usually make the following disclaimer. Kabbalah, the methodology of Kabbalah, is that it works on the basis of imagery. It uses terminology which are terms which are symbols, which are metaphors, because the truths that Kabbalah is trying to express, or perhaps the intellectual faculties that are being used to attempt to perceive the truths, work in such a way that they cannot be described in concrete terms. So the Mekubalim can only speak through symbolism, through metaphor, through imagery. Now, of course, that's one of the things that makes Kabbalah particularly dangerous for people who don't really understand it, okay? Because it sounds at times, or you can find a text at least, it sounds very, very simple, and really it means something completely different than what the uninitiated might think that it means. So, when I speak about Kabbalah, I usually say, I can tell you words, I'm not sure I understand what they mean, but after all, we're not exactly studying Kabbalah here. We want to take a piyut that we all say every week, and that we can understand, first of all, on a simple level. And even if we don't understand all of the Kabbalah that's deep inside of this piyut, if we understand some of the words of Kabbalah, then at least we'll understand that there is a remez to something, even if we don't really understand exactly what that something is. But at the same time, it's a word of caution is always necessary. Kabbalah is the type of thing that to study it requires years, really. A person has to really immerse himself or herself in the study in order to understand what is really being said. And words do not really convey meaning. They only are the framework that is used to kind of transport the meaning. I don't know if what I said just made any sense, but that's the best I can describe it. So therefore, before we get into the Zemer, I have to give you a brief introduction to some Kabbalistic terminology. Not to Kabbalah, if you don't understand Kabbalah, but to some terms. Some of the terms that are found in the classic works of Kabbalah, the Zohar, and even those who came before it, the Sefer Yetzirah, for example. And some of the terms that acquired a particular meaning in Tzfat in the 16th century, what's called the Kabbalah De'ari, which of course is the framework in which this particular poem was written. Here's a fancy word for you, for you university students, right? Kabbalah is based on a concept known as panentheism. Panentheism. Okay, so want to define that? Okay, I'll define it for you. Panentheism means that God, or godliness, can be perceived in everything. That God is immanent as opposed to transcendent. Okay, one way of perceiving God is that God is completely removed and absolutely untouchable. Right? The deists, for example, have such a conception. Right? That God is completely removed beyond, and God exists and even creates or created, but that there is no way of perceiving him at all. Right? Kabbalah acknowledges that. But in addition to being transcendent, God is also immanent, which means that godliness is in everything. Panentheism is not to be confused with a concept that both in the name of it and in its what it says sounds very similar, but is incredibly different, and that is pantheism. Panentheism and pantheism are two very different things. Pantheism is Kfirah, is Avodah Zarah, basically. If you study anything, it's Spinoza, for example. Pantheism is the belief that God is nature, or nature is God. The universe is God. Panentheism doesn't say that the universe is God, but rather that God is within and can be perceived within everything. God is the animating life force behind everything. That's Kabbalah. When you get to these inner recesses of truth, the difference between absolute truth and utter falsehood is sometimes kechut hasara. Right? It's between panentheism and pantheism, besides the little en, is what might appear to be a splitting hair syntactical distinction. God is in everything, or God is everything, is actually two fundamentally different perceptions. So Kabbalah says that God is both transcendent and immanent. It starts with the fact that God, and by the way, this tension we also saw in a previous zemer that we studied, right? Ki lo yirani ha'adam v'chai, but samanashi lelokim mekel chai, right? So here also you have this concept in Kabbalah. It starts with what they call the Or Ein Sof, right? Before creation, it was Or Ein Sof. Ein Sof is Hashem, the infinite. Or Ein Sof is God's, the infinite revelation of Hashem. And the Or, when there's Or Ein Sof, so nothing else can exist. If there's infinite revelation of godliness, then there can be nothing else. Nothing can coexist with God. Infinite does not leave room for finite. And so there needed to be something called Tzimtzum, in which God withdrew the Or in order to create a conceptual void in which creation can exist. See what I mean? I don't know what I'm saying. I'm just telling you words. I can use words. I don't know what it means, but I can use words. Right? The world was created in a number of stages. There were five worlds. And even now, the Or Ein Sof, which sits at the top, is filtered down to this world through 10 spherot. Okay? At the top sits Keter, which is the bridge between the Or Ein Sof and the lower worlds. And then you have the three higher spherot of Chochma, Bina, and Da'at. And then you have the seven lower worlds, the seven lower spherot of Chesed, how does it go? Chesed, Gevura, Tiferet, Netzach, Yesod, Hod, Malchut. Malchut being the lowest of the spherot. Lowest meaning this world actually exists in the sphera of Malchut. Okay, so the Or Ein Sof is filtered down, and there's a set of 10 spherot. Spherot are translated as emanations. Anyone have any idea what that means? I don't. I think it's trying to express, right, that this Or Ein Sof, which is Hitgalut of Hashem, right, which was Mitzumtzam in order to create these worlds, is still being animated, and what is sustaining all of existence is this Or Ein Sof, which is filtering down from the higher world down to the sphere of Malchut in which this world exists. Another framework that Kabbalah speaks of is duality. Duality. Two. And that concept is used at times to refer to Hashem. And here the danger of misusing or misunderstanding terminology is extremely potent, right? The Kabbalists speak of Kudsha Brichu and Shechina at times as if they are two separate things. They're not. But Kudsha Brichu being the essence of Hashem, which is sometimes associated with the Keter at the top of the Sefirot, Shechina is the way God is perceived. That's associated with the sphere of Malchut, which is the bottom of the Malachit, right? Now, Galut and Ge'ulah, which to a non-Kabbalist perhaps are historical terms, or one might even say political terms, to the Kabbalists represent the state of the world. In order to create the world, there was a Shvirat HaKelim. This is already the Arizal. Shvirat HaKelim, which caused Nitzotzot, sparks of Kedusha, to scatter throughout existence. And that creates disunity. So Kudsha Brichu and Shechina are separated. Shechinta Bigaluta. I'm really good at throwing words at you, right? Shechinta Bigaluta. The Shechina is in exile. Geula is when the Shechina and Kudsha Brichu reunite. Says the Navi Zechariah, Bayom Ahu Yihyeh Hashem Echad Ushmo Echad. Hashem is Echad. Shmo, his name, the way he's perceived, is Shechina. Bayom Ahu Yihyeh Hashem Echad Ushmo Echad. Yichud of Kudsha Brichu and Shechina, that's Geula. But for now, Kudsha Brichu and Shechina are separated, Shechinta Begaluta. And the sparks of Nitzotzot, of Kedusha, are encased in the klipot of Kochot Atuma, husks, shells, and need to be liberated to redeem the world. That's called Tikkun. And how's that done? That's done through doing mitzvot. When a person does mitzvot, the person redeems, elevates the object with which the mitzvah is performed, and the sparks of Kedusha that are in that physical object, and it elevates them, redeems them, causes Geulah. And thus, the Mekubalim, before doing a mitzvah, they focus their Kavanah. Hinani Muchanu Mezuman. That's a Kabbalistic formulation. They focus their attention in doing the mitzvah for the purpose of Tikkun, L'shem Yichud Kudsha Brichu U'Shchinta, in order to unite Kudsha Brichu and Shechina and bring the world to Geulah. And this image of this duality of Kudsha Brichu and Shechina as separate entities that have to be reunited often is associated with other terminology or other images, either from the world or from other parts of Torah, that the Kabbalists view in a certain way. Kudsha Brichu is called the masculine and Shechina the feminine. The sun and the moon, for example. The sun is masculine, the moon is feminine. The sun gives the light, the moon receives the light. The male gives, the female receives. There's the image from Shir HaShirim, the Dod and the Ra'ayah. That's the masculine and the feminine. Often it's understood that the metaphor of Shir HaShirim is that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is the Dod and Am Yisrael is the Ra'ayah. But a Kabbalistic interpretation has that the Shechina is the Ra'ayah. But then again, sometimes Am Yisrael and Shechina are connected, as we'll see. Also the Shemot of Hashem, the Shem Havaya, and the Shem Adnut reflect those two aspects. And even sometimes pronouns, Ani is Shechina, and Hu is is the Keter, which is connected to Ein Sof, as in Hoshanot Ani Vahu Hoshiana. Don't ask what that means, but that's what it refers to. I only tell you that because the word who appears in the Zemar in an important way. And also Shabbat. Shabbat is first of all associated with Shekhinah. Shabbat is also associated with Geulah. Now, this particular Zemar is obviously, as I said, closely associated with the Minhag of Kabbalat Shabbat. We spoke already when we were doing Mayididut. We spoke about the Minhag of the Arizal and his followers who would actually go out to the fields outside the city in order to greet the Shabbat. This Zemer, L'cha Dodi Likrat Kala, Likrat Shabbat L'chu B'nei L'cha, that Minhag is literally referred to in the Zemer, and of course the Zemer became very quickly, it was written for this purpose and quickly became, one might almost say, the centerpiece. Really, the Kabbalat Shabbat was the sixth Prakim of Tehillim that we say, and then Mizmor Shel Yom HaShabbat, right? But the Zemer of L'cha Dodi, right, which is not from Tehillim, which was placed into there, you know, it became part and parcel of that particular minhag, that particular ceremony. And I remind you again that the notion of going out to greet the Shabbat is not based on Kabbalah. It appears in the Gemara. We mentioned it last time. The Gemara in Shabbat, Tafkuf Yuter Amud Aleph, Rabbi Chanina would get dressed and go out and say, Bo'u v'neitzei likrat Shabbat Hamalka. Rabbi Yana would get dressed and say, Bo'i kala, Bo'i kala. That's the Gemara. Now, but the value added here is that the notion of Shabbat as a kala, Kala being Shechina, and the Dod, which is Kudsh Abrichu, takes on a whole added layer of significance in the terminology of the Ariza and of Kabbalah. And also something else. If you look at the Zemer, this is one of the striking parallels that I was referring to earlier. If you look at the Piyut, you'll see that the first two stanzas speak directly about Shabbat. Maybe we should read through it one time together. I'll read it out loud. Read it one time. L'cha dodi likrat kala p'nei Shabbat mekabla shamor v'zachor b'dibur echad hishmianu kel hamyuchad Hashem echad u'shmo echad l'shem u'tiferet v'l'tila likrat Shabbat l'chu v'nelcha ki hi mekor habracha merosh mikedem nisucha Sof ma'ase b'machshava tchila. Mikdash melech ir melucha kumi tzei mitocha hafecha rav lach shevet b'emek habacha v'hu yachamol alayich chemla. Hitna'ari me'afar kumi livshi b'gdei tifarteich ami al yad ben yishai b'et halachmi karva el nafshi ge'ala. Hit'orri, hit'orri, kiva oreich, kumi ori, uri, uri, shir da baby, kivod Hashem, alayich nigla. Lo tevoshi, velo tikalmi, mati shtochachi, umatehemi, bach yechesu aniye ami, venivnita ir al tila. Vahayulim shisa shosayich, virachaku kom nivalayich, יסיס עלייך אלוקייך כנסוס חתן על קלה. ימין ושמאל תפרוצי, ואת השם תעריצי, על יד איש בן פרצי, ונשמחה ונגילה. בואי בשלום, עטרת בעלה, גם ברינה ובשמחה, בפן גרסאות ובצהלה, תוך אמוני עם סגולה, בואי חלה, בואי חלה, ונשמצי שבת מלכיתה. So the refrain, Pnei Shabbat Nekabalah, which is repeated after each stanza of Pnei Shabbat. But in terms of the stanzas themselves, the first one, Shamor v'zachor v'dibur echad, clearly refers to Shabbat. Likrat Shabbat l'chu v'nelcha refers to Shabbat. And the Bo'i Kala at the end refers to Shabbat. All the middle ones, though, don't really directly address Shabbat. What are all the middle stanzas about?
Mikdash Melachim Lucha, Hit Na'ari Me'afar Kumi, Hit Ori, Hit Ori, Lo Tevoshi, Velo Tikalmi, Vayulim Shisa Shosayich,
Yamim Usmol Tifrotzi. What do all those refer to? The Gula of Am Yisrael, which particularly for the Mekubalim is the Gula of the entire world, the entire universe, the Shekhinah herself. But that's exactly the format we saw in Dror Yikra. Here's the first two. But it was the first stanza and the last stanza were about Shabbat. The middle ones were all about Gula in general. Same format here.
Again, I don't know if it was a model. I don't know, maybe my friend Avi would tell me there's 50,000 of those and it's a pattern in Piyutim. Maybe it is, I don't know. But the message is clearly the same. But again, on the backdrop of the Kabbalistic terminology, it has layers of additional meaning. Shabbat and Gula is a two-way street. Shabbat is a personal Gula. And by the way, another parallel. We talked about the pasuk of Dror Yikra Levenim Bas, Yovel, right? It turns out that in certain Kabbalistic books, Yovel is the symbol of the primordial Shabbat or something like that. I saw some reference someplace that Yovel is like the heavenly Shabbat or something. Connection there. Right? So Shabbat, I can experience Geula in the here and now through Shabbat. Shabbat is Me'ain Olam Haba. It brings the future Geula here to the present. But Shabbat is also the vehicle for Geula. And we saw also that Gemara in Shabbat of Kufu Chet, Ilamale Lo, Shamu Yisrael Lo, Shei Shabbatot. If only the Jewish people would keep two Shabbatot, the Geula would come. So Shabbat is both a predecessor of the Geula, or a preview of the Geula, the vehicle, the personal Geula, and Shabbat is also the tool for which the whole world achieves Geula. Now this Zemer, therefore, which is recited, the Piyut, which is recited at the threshold, the Ma'avar, between Chol and Shabbat, brings us, transports us, from Chol into Shabbat, Boikala, as we greet the Shabbat, but it's not only we who greet the Shabbat. V'chad dodi likrat kala. Who's the dod? Kadosh Baruch Hu, right? The Paitan turns to Hashem, to Kutcha Brichu, up there at the top, and says, L'chad dodi likrat kala, come greet your Shekhinah. Kenei Shabbat nikavela. I'm going to join Hashem in greeting the Shabbat. So that brings me into the Shabbat, brings Kutcha Brichu and Shekhinah together, brings Geula to the world. It's a ma'avar from Chol to Kodesh, from Galut to Geula. It's a transformative experience. So let's now go stanza by stanza and we'll see how the Paitan wove all this together. Shamor v'zachor b'dibur echad. So that, of course, refers, first of all, the terms Shamor and Zachor, I'm sure you know, come from where? The Aseret HaDibrot, right? One of the distinctions between the Aseret HaDibrot, the way they are written in Sefer Shmot and the way they are repeated in Sefer Tvarim, is that in Sefer Shmot it says, Zachor et Yom HaShabbat L'Kodesho, and in Dvarim it says, Shamor et Yom HaShabbat L'Kodesho. And the idea that Shamor v'Zachor b'Dibur Echad Ne'emru, after all, what did Hashem really say? Right? In Sefer Shmot it says, Sefer Shmot tells the narrative of what actually happened when Bnei Yisrael came to Har Sinai, and there it says that God said to them, Zachor et Yom Shabbat L'Kodesho. 40 years later, in Sefer Dvarim, Moshe Rabbeinu was repeating what happened, and he said, Et HaDvarim HaEla, these are the things that you heard from Hashem, and he repeated it as, Shamor et Yom Shabbat L'Kodesho. So what did Moshe do? He lied, he changed it, understand. Torah said, God said Zachor, Moshe repeated it as Shamor. Chazal explained, no, God really said both. He said Zachor and Shamor at the same time. Torah couldn't write them both at the same time, so one was written in Shmot, one was written in Devarim. And that notion that Zachor and Shamor are stated b'dibur echad,
That notion is actually understood by the Gemara in Brachot Daf Kaf Amud Bet as having great halachic significance. I'm sure people here know what's the halachic significance of the connection between Zachar and Shamar.
Because they're related, so that women are not only patur from the
Correct.
But they're connected to show that women are obligated with the positive and the negative
commandments. Correct. Exactly. Correct. Zachor, which is the mitzvah of kiddush, is a mitzvah aseh, which is, of course, mitzvah aseh shezman grama. Shamar, protect the Shabbat, is understood by Chazal to be a reference to the mitzvot lo taseh, particularly the isur melacha. So normally women would be commanded to keep mitzvot lo taseh, including a mitzvah lo taseh shezman grama. So if there would be an isur to do melacha only on Shabbat, women would be obligated in that. But a mitzvah aseh shezman grama, kiddush, women would normally be exempt. However, says the Gemara in Brachot Afkaf, Zachor v'Shamor, the Dibur Echad Ne'emru, they were said together, and therefore kol sheyeshno b'shmira, yeshno b'zechira. Therefore, whoever is obligated in the lo taseh is also obligated in the aseh, and the halachic ramification of that is that women are actually obligated to make their to say kiddush. Okay, that's a halachic point. But this was not the halachic zemer. The halachic zemer was last time, right? Why is the Python here throwing that in? If this would have appeared in Mayavidut, along with all the other things we saw there, you know, all the references to various halachot of Shabbat, if it would have said something about Shamor v'Zachor b'Dibur Echad, and something to do with maybe with women or kiddush or something, so then we would have understood. But what's it doing here? So here you have your value-added addition of the Kabbalistic terminology. See, it seems that Shamor and Zachor have also connotations in Kabbalah. Particularly, Zachor is masculine and Shamor is feminine. Not the word, but the concept. The connection between Zachor and Zachar, fairly obvious. It's the same Shoresh. So Zechira is somehow connected to masculinity. But also, the notion that Zachor is a mitzvah taseh and Shamor is a mitzvah lo taseh, and activity is associated with the masculine what's the word among for the masculine attributes, and passivity with the feminine. So Zachor becomes the masculine and Shamor becomes the feminine. Or therefore, to round up the equation, Zachor is Kudsha Brichu and Shamor is Shechina. Therefore, the notion that Zachor v'Shamor v'Dibur Echad Ne'emru is not only a point that teaches us something interesting about halakha, but it also refers to the unification of Kudsha Brichu and Shechina, which is the Geula, which takes place on Shabbat. And perhaps the fact that the halachic ramification of that is kind of an equalization of masculine and feminine, perhaps might also, if I was a Kabbalist, I might see significance in that. I don't know. Or maybe a Kabbalist will tell me I don't know what I'm talking about. I don't know. But with that in mind, that Zachor is Kudsha Brichu and Shamor is Shechina, now read the paragraph. Shamor v'Zachor b'dibur echad hishmi'anu kel ha-miyuchad. Miyuchad. As in Yichud Kudsha Brichu Shechina. The reunited God. Now listen to this won't blow you away. Hashem Echad, Rishmo Echad. Where's that from? Where are those words from? Where? We said them a few minutes ago. From the Navi Zechariah. Except, how did the Zechariah say it? Bayom Ahu Yihyeh Hashem Echad, Rishmo Echad. This is present tense. Okay? It's Shabbat. Hashem Echad, Rishmo Echad is now. Or then, maybe at Har Sinai. But it's all, but it's stated in the present. So, Shamor v'Zachor v'Dibur Echad Hishmianu Kel HaMiyuchad Hashem Echad U'Shmo Echad. L'Sheimu Tiferet L'Tila. Those words are actually based on a pasuk in Dvarim, Chavav Yudchet. היום הזה השם אלוקיך מצא בך לשמוע, לעשות את החוקים האלה ואת המשפטים, ושמרת ועשית אותם בכל לבבך ובכל נפשך. בסדר? יפקיד במצוות. והשם המיר לך היום להיות לא לעם סגולה, כאשר דיבר לך לשמוע כל מצוותיו. בגיבן המצוות תקיפתם, which will make you a עם סגולה, לתתך עליון על כל הגויים, אשר עשה לתהילה ולשם ולתפארת. ולהיותך עם קדוש, השם לקחה כאשר דיבר.
So the Torah here presents mitzvot as that which elevates us from all the other nations, that which achieves our geula, l'shem u'tiferet, the tila l'shem u'tiferet there, and here it's inserted into this context of the geula of the entire universe. Apparently also those three words refer to specific sefirot, but I didn't know enough to get into that.
Likrat Shabbat l'chu v'nelcha ki hi mikor habracha. Shabbat Shabbat is mikor habracha. Shabbat is the source of all bracha. Now, this also can be understood on two levels. There's a simple level that the Gemara tells us that observing Shabbat is good for a person. We talked about this Gemara also in one of the previous things that we spoke about. The Gemara in Shabbat Daf Kuf Yud Chet Amud Aleph Kol HaNeget HaShabbat Notnim Lo Nachala B'li Mitzarim. Right, and the Gemara there on the next page tells the story that you all heard when you were children about Yosef Mokir Shabbat, right? We all know about the poor man who went out and bought a fish because he wanted to honor the Shabbat, and he found inside the jewel that the fish had, right? So on that level, Shabbat is Mekor HaBracha. But Kabbalistically, more words, okay? The Ein Sof, the Or Ein Sof, which trickles down through the Sefirot, is referred to as light. It's also used with different imagery as water. The Sefirah of Binah, Bat and Binah also are masculine and feminine, by the way. And the Sefirah of Binah contains the Brecha Elyona. The water which is coming down from the Mekor gathers in this pool, Brecha Elyona, and from that it trickles down to the world. The primordial, the original source of everything, Meirosh Mikedem, gathers in this Brecha Elyona. From there, it trickles down. Nisucha. You know, lenasech, lenesech, right? It is poured down to the lower sefirot. So, l'chrab Shabbat l'chu v'nelcha. Again, that's a reference to the actual going out of Kabbalat Shabbat. Because, ki hi mikor habracha, bracha, brecha, merosh mikedem nisucha. Not only that, but now I'm really getting over my head. But I shouldn't even be saying this because I haven't the foggiest idea what it means. But apparently, the phrase "Meirosh Mikedem Nisucha" is based on a poem that had been written by the Ramban. Ramban was a Kabbalist. Meirosh Mikadnei Olamim, he wrote. Nimseiti b'mechmanav hachatun. Now the phrase Merosh Mikedem, the word Rosh, take the word Rosh, is spelled Resh Aleph Shin. If you add one letter to each of those three letters, you get the letter after Resh is Shin, the letter after Aleph is Bet, the letter after Shin is Tav. So if you add one, which is one of the ways that Kabbalah manipulates words, if you add one letter to Rosh, you get Shabbat. Or Rosh is Kedem, Kodem, to Shabbat. Now, I don't know what that means. Okay, but somehow, but all I'm trying to show you is that quite possibly the author and those who sang it did know what it meant. Okay? And it also has to do with the idea that Shabbat is the time of unification of Kodesh Brichu and Shekhinah. That which came before everything, and that which is the end result of everything. Merosh mikedem nisucha. Rosh kedem is the primordial, what Shabbat was. Nisucha, it comes down in Shvirat HaKelim into the world as it is now. So Shabbat is the origin as well as the destination. Sof ma'aseh b'machshava tchila, the origin and the destination. And here also that expression can be understood on a simple level. Sof ma'aseh b'machshava tchila. Shabbat came at the end, after the Sheshit and Bereishit. The final product was the Shabbat, but the Shabbat was really the purpose of the creation in the first place. Right, a lot of times, sof ma'aseh is that which was machshava tchila, right? A lot of times when you enter a project, the end result is really what you had in mind from the beginning, right? One of the Perushim here quotes a Midrash in Bereishit Rabbah that explains Shabbat like this: Mashal lemelech she'asa lo chupa v'tzira v'chira. Right? He made a whole chuppah. Now he's ready to get married. All he needs is the kala. Right? Sof ma'aseh b'machshava tchila. The purpose of the whole thing was the Shabbat. So that's on one level. But again, Kabbalistically, it has to do with the fact that the olam ha'asiyah, which is connected to the sphere, that's the lowest of the five worlds, which is connected to the sphere of Malchut, the lowest of the ten sphere, which is connected to Shekhinah, right? Sof ma'aseh, the world as it exists now, the machshava tchila, is actually reflecting the Or Ein Sof, the beginning. Okay, I've now gone completely beyond anything that I even think I understand, okay? But I just wanted to use this stanza as an example to show you how it's poetry that can be read on one level, and if you know, which I don't really, but if you know the Kabbalistic terminology and the meaning behind it, there's layers of meaning that are built on top of it. Yeah. Shabbat is Mekor HaBracha, I think. But as we go on now, you're going to see that it becomes less and less clear who's being spoken to and who's speaking. And I think that also has to do with the unification that's going on here.
Like the Bina is trickling down from Shabbat?
No, I don't think the Bina trickles down. The or the water trickles down from Bina through the lower sphere.
And that has to do with Shabbat because that's
the connection to Shabbat. Because Shabbat is the Mekor HaBracha, which is the Brecha Elyona. And but Shabbat also is the Shekhinah, which is the Sefirot of Malchut. So Shabbat is the connection between the higher and the lower. Something like that. Now the Paitan turns his attention. Mikdash Melech, Ir Melucha. Mikdash. Now, on one level, here, as in Dror Yikra, we turn our attention, as it were, away from Shabbat. You can understand this verse, these next several verses, you can understand in non-Kabbalistic sense. You can understand them historically. Right? Mikdash Melech Ir Melucha Yerushalayim. The city of Yerushalayim, Kumi, Tse'i Mitoch HaHafecha. That image, Tse'i Mitoch HaHafecha, comes from where? Who escaped from the Hafecha? Lot. Sodom was overturned, and Lot escaped. Okay? Yerushalayim was overturned, and she's escaping. Ravlach Shevet Ve'emek HaBacha V'hu Yachamol Alayich Chemla. Emek HaBacha comes from Tehillim Peidalim. A parak of Tehillim that we've seen already a few times, and another one of these strange, 150 parakim of Tehillim. Why do we keep coming back to this one? In seemingly unrelated ways, that I assume are related. L'matzeach ala gipit l'vnei korach mizmor. Ma yididot mishkinotecha Hashem tzvakot. Right? Nichzefa v'gam kalta nafshi l'chatzrot Hashem. I desire and yearn for the Beit HaMikdash. Midi u'bisari yiranu el kelchai. Gam tzipor matzavayit u'dror kein la. Asher shatay efrochehet mizbichotecha Hashem tzvakot malki ve'elokai. Ashrei yoshrei beitecha. Od yehalomu chasela. Those who arrive at that mishkan, who are able to dwell in your house. Ashrei adam oz lo bach misilot pilvavam. Ovrei be'emek habacha ma'ayan lishituhu gam brachot yateh more. Ovrei be'emek habacha. What is bacha? It's with an aleph. Bacha, bet chaf aleph, apparently is a type of a plant, which is very dry. Dry, thorny plant. So the emek habacha is a place of dry thorns where there is no life. Obrei be'emek habacha. Those who pass through this desolate valley, ma'ayan yishituhu, will be watered from a fountain. Gam brachot yatemore. But of course, the term bacha also conjures up something else. It sounds very similar to crying, bechi, right? And therefore, some of the mefarshim understand emek habacha not only as the valley of thorns, but the valley of tears. Modern Israeli toda'a, up in the Golan, a place where a very bloody tank battle took place in the Yom Kippur War, where many people were killed. That battle somehow got named the Battle of Emek HaBacha, and the place where it took place. Any of you that was in MMY on the fuel there? Was that? I don't know. All I remember is being there, sitting down under a tree, and we'll be looking down at the valley, and Moshe telling the whole story of how the battle took place and the heroic actions of the soldiers. And when it was finished, it was time to go back on the bus. The Rabbi Katz said, "Come on, get up, get on the bus." Rav lach shevet be'emek habacha. Yeah. So, but now, and of course, if you're already going to move away from the literal meaning, if Emek HaBacha is the valley of thorns, but if Emek HaBacha can also be the valley of tears, then Emek HaBacha could also be not the valley of tears, but Omek HaBechi, the depth of tears. Right? So now let's read the next... You know what? I'm going to read all four stanzas here. By the way, if you want to know how these stanzas can be read on a simple level, having nothing to do with Shabbat and nothing to do with Kabbalah, simply as very beautiful poetry alluding to the Geula of Am Yisrael, consider this fact. The modern religious Zionists, when they were trying to come up with stuff to say on Yom HaTzma'ut, right? In some places, if you go here to Merkaz Arab and other places, on the night of Yom HaTzma'ut, they had this whole tefillah that they've constructed, where they try to basically draw from different elements in Jewish liturgy around the year to try to express what they're trying to say. Right? They're viewing this as a night of Geulah, a time when, according to religious Zionist ideology, when Am Yisrael
has been redeemed, or the Geula is beginning, Atchalta the Geula, etc. So there's imagery that's drawn from Pesach, there's imagery that's drawn from other times. And one of the things that's recited on that night is part of Lecha Dodi, these stanzas. They don't, in the refrain, they replace, instead of Pnei Shabbat Nekablah, which doesn't make sense in the middle of the week, they replace it with, I think, Zeh Hayom Asah Hashem Magila V'Nismecha Bo. But they sing a few of these stanzas. Not in the context in which they were written, but in, well, not exactly, in a sense it is the context in which they were written, on one level, right? So if you read it on that level, Mikdash Melech Ir Melucha, Yerushalayim, the city which has been destroyed, which is desolate, Kumi, Tse'imi Tocha Hafecha. Rav Lach Shevet V'Eime Kabacha. Enough! Enough! You've been sitting in that valley of desolation, in that valley of tears, in the depths of tears. Get up! V'hu yachamol alayichem la. Hashem's having rachamim on you. It's na'ari me'afar, kumi! L'vshivigdei tifarteichami. Those psukim are drawn straight out of Yeshayahu. Yeshayahu Nun Bet. Uri, Uri, wake up! Livshi uzech tzion! Livshi bigdeiki vartech Yerushalayim ir hakodesh! Ki lo yosif yavo bach od arel v'tamei! Yerushalayim, the city, this is the Nevuah Nechama, the second half of Yeshayahu. Yerushalayim, the city which has been trampled, the city which has been desolated, violated. It's time for your geula, get up! Put on your good clothes. No more Arel v'tamei will be coming to you. Hit na'ari me'afar, kumi shvi Yerushalayim. Hit patchi mosrei tzabarech, shvi abatzio. Get up. Brush yourself off from the dirt. Sit erect. Release your shackles around your neck, O captive Batzio. The Rabbi Yeshayahu speaks to Yerushalayim. Speaks to his Am Yisrael. Drawing on that, Hit na'ari me'afar kumi, l'shivik dei tifarteichami, ayad ben Yishai beit halachmi. That's, of course, whom? Who's baking? Ben Yishai beit halachmi? Well, it's David, or it's actually Ben David, the Mashiach, right? He's the one who's going to take you out of the dirt. Karvai al nafshi ge'ala. Hit ori, wake up! Kiva Orech, Kumi, Ori. That's also Pasuk in Yeshayahu, Perech Samach. Kumi, Ori, Kiva Orech. Uri, Uri. Shir Daberi. That's based on a Pasuk in Shoftim. Kvod Hashem, Alayich Nipla. Lo Tevoshi, Velo Tikalmi. You'll not be shamed, you'll no longer be humiliated. Matish tochachi, why are you bent over? Matehemi, why are you crying? Bach yechasu aniyeyami v'nivnita ir altila. The city has been rebuilt. That's a nevuah v'yirmiyahu. V'nivnita ir altila. No more need to cry. No more need to be humiliated. Yerushalayim, you've been redeemed. You've been rebuilt. Get up. Stand tall. Yaminu smol tifrotzi. V'yet Hashem ta'aritzi. Oh, I skipped, sorry. Vayalim shisa shosayich, v'rachaku kol nivalayich. Right, all those who attack you, now they're going to get their just reward, their just retribution. Right, again, we remember the poem of Dunash, right? Mitot tzarai v'af v'evra, right? Vayalim shisa shosayich, v'rachaku kol nivalayich, yasis alayich elokayich, kimsos katan al kala. And that is also... that is also based on a pasuk again in Yeshayahu, one of the pasukim that we read in the seven haftarot of Nechama, Umisos chatan al kala yasis alayich elokayich. Yamin usmol tifrotzi. Yamin usmol tifrotzi. Avraham was told, Ufaratzta, yama vakedma, tafona v'negva, you'll spread out in all directions. And the expression parot is of course also Peretz. Peretz, who's Peretz? is the ancestor of David from Shevet Yehudah. So it's all woven together here. Yaminu Shmol Tifrotzi, Ve'at Hashem Taritzi, Al Yad Ish Ben Partzi. Now he's not called Ben Yishai, but Ben Partzi. So this unit here, from Mikdash Melech till Yaminu Shmol Tifrotzi, can all be read simply as beautiful poetry, pulling from mainly from the Nevuot Nechama of Yishayahu, and also from other places, from Yirmiyahu, and from Bereshit, and from other places, weaving together in poetically beautiful, stirring terminology the images of Am Yisrael getting up. And again, that's why when they wanted to say, find something to say on Yom HaTzma'ut, what could be more appropriate, right? Na'ari me'afar kumi, hit ori, kida orech, right? But Rav Shlomo Alkabetz, when he wrote this, of course, he had all that in mind. But there's also a whole other layers of me. It's getting late, so I'll just refer to some of them. Mikdash Melechim Luchav, we've already seen a number of places the connection between Shabbat and Mikdash. Right? The Torah connects them, I told you. Et Shabtotai Tishmoru Mikdashi Tira'u, the connection between Mishkan and Isra Melacha. The Paitan who wrote Mayididut Menuchatech, who is drawing on the Pasuk again in Tilim Peidala, the Mayididut Mishkinotecha, right? Interchanging Mikdash and Shabbat. So it's also the Shabbat, which is Shechinah Begaluta, the Kala, that's being greeted by the Dod, that's rising Mitoch HaTecha. The Hu, Yachamol Alaychem, I remember Hu means something. Who is Kudsha Brichu? So the Kalah that's being greeted by the Dod is being addressed. So the Paitan here might be speaking directly to the Shabbat when he says Mikdash Melech Yemulcha Kumi Tzei Mitocha Atecha V'hu Yachem Ol Alei Chemla, or to the Shechina, speaking to the Shechina. And thus Hidna'ari Me'asar Kumi Lifshi Bigdei Tifarteich Ami. How do you understand those words? Lifshi Bigdei Tifarteich Ami. Where is what is the grammatical function of the word Ami? How do you explain that? My nation, but right? But what does it mean? Lifshi Bigdei Tifarteich Ami. Put on your clothes of glory. And what is Ami? Why is that word there? What does that mean? Put on the clothes of glory, my nation. I always understood it as the object, as that which is being addressed. Who is being addressed? Who should put on big day tifartech? Ami. You, my nation, lishi big day tifartech. A little bit of a grammatical problem there, because the word am is in Lashon Zachar. So why is it lishi big day tifartech? A number of the Mefarshim, though, that I saw here, I said, that's not how it's meant. By the way, in Yishayahu, who was putting on the big day Tiferet? It was Yerushalayim. Uri, Livshei Zeich Tzion. Livshei big day Tifarteich Yerushalayim Yir HaKodesh. And if Yerushalayim is Mikdash Melech, which is Shechina, so it could be that the Shechina is being told, "Hit na'ari me'afar, come out of your galut, lishi bigdei tifarteich." What are the bigdei tifarteich that the Shechina should put on? Ami. Wrap yourself, Shechina, in the glorious begadim, which are your nation, Am Yisrael. Am Yisrael perhaps is not the one putting on the begadim. Am Yisrael is the begadim, and it's the Shechina that's putting them on. And of course, Yasis alayich elokayich kimsos chatan al kala is not simply the way you read it in Yishayahu. It sounds like that's just an example of someone who's happy. And Hashem was angry at Am Yisrael, he sent the galut, but now, kimsos chatan al kala, yasis alayich lo kayich.
But in the terminology of the dod and the kala, right? And the kala is the one who's being addressed.
So yasis alayet elotayet kimsos chatan al kala represents the unification of kucha brichu and shchina. And finally,
so now the python standing at the threshold of between Chol and Kodesh began with Lichadodi, calling up as it were, to the unreachable Dod, Likrat Kala, the Shechina, represented by the coming in of Shabbat. Went out Likrat Shabbat Lechu v'nelcha, to greet the Shabbat which is Mekor HaBracha. And in that way, brought himself into immediate contact with Yula, Kel HaMiuchad, Hashem Echad, Ushmo Echad. Then, witnesses, or calls upon the Shekhinah herself to rise from Galut and reunite with the Dod, bringing about the Geulah of the entire world, and with it the Geulah of Yerushalayim and Am Yisrael. Has been transported into the future world of total Geulah, now returns to greet the Shabbat, which is coming in the here and now. Bo'i v'shalom ateret ba'la. Bo'i kala, bo'i kala. One other point I wanted to make. Backward, I'm sorry. Yes. The Ariza said that it's extremely, extremely, extremely important that a person accept Shabbat in total simcha. Because Shabbat represents Hashra'ah, Shechina on the world. And Shechina can only be accepted with Simcha. So the Arizal actually instructed to recite, most people say Bo'i Kala twice. That's how it is in the Gemara with Rabbi Yana, Bo'i Kala, Bo'i Kala. For some reason which I don't understand, he instructed people to say Bo'i Kala twice, and then a third time, Bo'i Kala, quietly. And after that, Shabbat Malkita. By the way, also, you recall that the image of Shabbat as a Melech, or a Malkah, is also found in that Gemara there. It's also mentioned by the Rambam. Right? They both, and they say, Likrat Shabbat HaMelech. So, the expressions of Rina and Simcha, that are in this last, stanza, are also relevant to that as well. Bo'i v'shalom ateret bala, gam b'simcha v'tzahala, toch emunei am segula, that's the Am Yisrael, it's greeting the Shabbat and the Shechina, bo'i kala, Shabbat Malkitah.